Mm-hmm. I think I have a name for a biography, From White Shoe to Black Hat. There was a child that came home from school, and he says, "Mommy, I have great news. I'm in the school play." Wonderful. She says, "Tell me, what's your role?" "Great key role. I have the role of a Jewish husband." She says, "That won't do." She says, "Go back to your teacher and insist you want a speaking part." So I'm thrilled to have a speaking part here with Jeff. I was going over my notes from previous years. I surely can't remember what I've said or haven't said from year to year. But this appears to be lecture number 7 on behalf of Jeff. So I figured, I was thinking back to the Seder, you know, who knows, seven
days of the week.
7 days of the week, which means you're probably looking for a rest from me. Anyway, you have to take it up with Rabbi Zaitchik. Last time we spoke, we made up Lishana Habab Yerushalayim. We were hoping that the next year we'd get together, we'd all be in Yerushalayim. A lot has transpired since last year. I looked at my notes. It was the 15th of Marcheshvan. We gathered at the Miller's home. And one thing that's been quite meaningful in my life is an enhanced opportunity to work with Jeff, to work with Rabbi Zaitchik. Interesting, in May, I had a chance to speak with for a group in Passaic. They have a women's home for girls who've come over from seminary in Israel. So I didn't really know what I was getting into. So I sent a quick email to the director, the woman, Rebetzin, who runs the show over there, and says, "Look, what am I getting into? What kind of audience am I dealing with?" So she writes back to me, "I don't have any specific recommendations, but I would err on the side of not fluffy. These girls like serious Torah Musar, Hashkafa, sources, and whatever, but not a fluffy Kiruv Shir." So I emailed back, "All I have is fluff." I didn't cancel the Shir, but the point is that I like dealing with real people who are really growing, and that's what Jeff is all about. Like I say, there are two types of Jews in the world. There are those that are growing and those that are not growing. The opportunities that I've had to learn with Jews in Westchester and the Bronx has been incredibly inspiring for me. I was learning with one group, and one of the people there volunteered that she only wished she had more of two things in life: more children and a more deep, closer relationship with Hashem. I was thinking, how special such a human being, sitting in who knows where, in the Bronx. There was a group that wanted a class we want on Shabbos. We want to hear more about Shabbos. We want our Shabbos to be more meaningful. A group wants to hear more about Tefillah. We want our Tefillah to be more enriching. Class in Neshama Yaseira, learning with people about perfecting their midos, refining their character. And people's time is at a premium. And if people are carving time out of their day, out of a Friday, out of a this, out of that, "I'll meet you here, I'll meet you there, we'll learn over the phone." And sometimes I think to myself, I said, is there anyone else in Westchester County who's doing this right now? Is there any two Jews in the entire county that have this book that maybe was written 600 years ago or 700 years ago? Is there anyone doing that right now? And I'm telling you, there's a ruach, there's a spirit in the air. I was in Pace University for the Jewish Law Students Association there. And it was a meet and greet. Again, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. The first question they asked is, how many people are actually Jewish? So anyway, I guess the criteria to get into the Jewish Law Students Association is not that critical. But anyway, in the meantime, so as I'm packing up, one gentleman says to me, he says, "Rabbi," he says, "is that a prayer book?" I never go anywhere without a sefer. You never know where you can get stuck. So I always have a book with me, and I can't tell. So I grabbed a book out of the back of my trunk, and I grabbed a book called the Chovos Levavos, the Duties of the Heart. So this gentleman said to me, he says, "Rabbi," "is that a prayer book?" I said, "Not exactly." I said, "This is a book called the Duties of the Heart. It's about perfecting your service to Hashem and being the best possible Jew you can be." He says, "That sounds really interesting. I'd love to learn more about that." I almost fell over. A second-year law student's got about no time for anything, and he's interested in learning some book from 12th century Arabia? What in the world's going on? And so last Friday, and two Fridays ago, and that way 2-3 weeks in a row now, I went out to Pace University, and we're learning the Chovos Levavos. I said, is there anybody in the history of this law school that's ever learned the Chovos Levavos? It's shocking. A primary example of this, I've got to hand out my sources, a primary example of this are our hosts tonight, Jason and Vera, who I'm impressed with their growth, their commitment, their upward trajectory in Yiddishkeit, their desire to stave off complacency. I remember I got a call from them one night, fairly sure it was after 11 o'clock, and they said, look, we want to improve. We want things that should be better. And I think that these people are so credible. They're so special. They're so unique. Tonight's gathering, as we mentioned, is in memory of Jason's mother, her neshama shav and aliyah. I gave out one source sheet too many. Okay, here's my source sheet. No, that's not it. One second. I need one more. Anyone got an extra one? I made 25. Okay. Thank you very much. Number one on the list. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, okay? Mishu roitze be'emes lechaved es aviv imo, a person who really desires to honor his mother and his father, yaseik b'toira, a person should be busy in toira, maisim toivim, and good deeds, i.e., bringing together all of us tonight to learn in the home of the Kessler. Shezehu ha'kovod ha'godol, this is the greatest honor one could bestow upon their predecessors, on their father, their mother in this situation. She'oimim b'brios, people should say, ashrei lo'ov ve'em shegiblo ben kazeh. Fortunate is the mother that raised such a son. So I consider it a tremendous opportunity to be able to come together and learn Ilui Nishmas, Jason's mother, and she should be a faithful interceder on behalf of the Kessler family. Their house should always be filled with simcha and shalom and yiddish and nachas. Okay, now, here's the game plan. I'm going to speak for about 40 minutes. We've been through this before. Questions and answers are encouraged. Okay? If you have no idea what I'm talking about, please say, Rabbi, lawyer, hey you, I don't get it. One more time. Okay, I had gave a class at Or Sameach, and a guy, a Russian fellow, and so he has a gadget that as you say a word, I say a word in English, he doesn't know what it means, so he types it into his little translator, and he now can follow along. So we're talking about the laws of cooking on Shabbos, and making a chillant, and all of a sudden he starts cracking up. I say, I don't understand what's going on. He says, why are we talking about crackpots?
Lost in translation.
Exactly. So what I have to say tonight is quite controversial. I don't know if I've had the opportunity to challenge the members of JEP the way I will tonight. But my goal is to truly light a fire in every single one of your neshamas, and hopefully that fire will light up Westchester and beyond. There are certain books out there that you get, like, you know, a few pages into it. And you read this book, Amunah with Love and Chicken Soup? Yeah? Amazing, right? Six pages in, you're like, this is about a woman who's like dedicated her whole life to having guests. You're five pages into the book, you're out on the street looking for guests, right? You're like, please, find me a guest, right? And then you have over here the Rabbi Rieti's book. You're going to remember Yeti's book. This book, The 1 Minute Masket. So he has a whole program on how to really gear up your learning. You're 10 pages into it. You're ready. Just tell me how to do it already. I'm sold on it. I'm sold on the thing already, right? And then you have the Avos Chesed from the Chofetz Chaim. So he has a whole sefer on doing chesed and kind deeds for other people. You're 5 minutes into the book and you're ready to open up your house and you're ready to go dance at a wedding and you're ready to go. You're just hooked on chesed. So my goal is to get everyone hooked on a concept called Kiruv. Kiruv is a word that we would translate as outreach, okay? It's a word which means bringing Jews close to Hashem. Okay, there's kiruv rechokim, there's a kiruv outreach you can do on people who know nothing. They barely even know they're Jewish. There's something called kiruv kurvim, people who know they're Jewish, and yet it's not quite as meaningful and enriching as they'd like it to be. Right? Like when Shabbos comes in, and the guy next to you is crying hot tears of rapture, and you're wondering, well, what's this guy on, right? Yeah, I want my Yiddishkeit, my Judaism to be alive. And you bring a Jew back to Hashem, and you bring a Jew back to Har Sinai, and you don't know what you can do for generations and generations. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. The genesis of this year, of this class, it started like this. I was had the opportunity to give a lecture at a home of a rather wealthy individual. And as I was approaching the home, I was thinking to myself, like, wow, can you imagine what it must be like to be such a benefactor, to be able to give over and to be able to help support this institution, that institution? I was like, wondering what it must be like. And I said, wait a second. I'm going in there to teach this guy Torah. So who's the benefactor over here? I'm giving someone a gift that's going to last for eternity. Imagine you have a guy. He comes home and he says, my back is aching. He can't sleep. He's overweight. His cholesterol's too high. And he's like, he doesn't know where to start. He's got so many things that have to fix up. Someone says, look, why don't you get some exercise? Oh, that's a good idea. And I'll take care of this, and I'll take care of this, and I'll take care of this, and take care of that, and voila. Got one recommendation, and high tide rises all boats in the harbor, right? So you're going to teach a person Torah, you're going to open up their eyes to what it means to be a Jew, and you're going to enhance their Shabbos, and you enhance their marriage, you enhance their relationship with their children, and their relationship with themselves, and their character, and their role in the community. So you're opening up a person to the eyes of emes and the eyes of truth, and you near can't tell what the ramifications are going to be. Imagine you give a person, so you give them a subscription. You give a subscription to every magazine you like to read. What do you like to read? The Wall Street Journal. Yeah?
Sure.
So he said, oh, I got you a subscription to the Wall Street Journal. He says, this is great. He said, the Sunday one? I said, the Sunday one also. He says, how long is it for? Forever. That's a pretty good deal. Right? That's a pretty good deal. Now, how do we know, where's the source of the concept of Kiruv? Where do we know there is such a concept? Maybe I should just be busy getting close to God as much as I can. I live in some hut someplace, and I'll just dedicate myself to spirituality, and that's that. How do I know there is such a concept? Says the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, number two on your sheet. Number two on your sheet. Hu hayo Omer. Hillel said this in Pirkei Avos. Im ein ani mili. If I'm not for myself, mili, who's going to be for me? If I'm not going to take care of my own obligations and opportunities as a Jew, if I'm not going to put on tefillin in the morning, I'm not going to light candles, Leil Shabbos, who's going to do it for me? Right? Can't just rely on Rabbi Zaitchik. Right? Says the next line, Kishan ani la'atzmi, and I'm just for myself, mo'ani. But nevertheless, if I'm so busy focusing on myself, even though it's got a good, you know, a good source because I want to make myself better and improve myself, but at the end of the day, if it's all about me, I'm missing the point. Right? We just had a few weeks ago, Avraham Avinu just had a bris, right? It's 1,000 degrees outside, and he's 90 years old, right? And who's he? Who came to visit? Who came to visit? God. Oh, nice to meet you. Come on in, right? Nice to meet you. And so he's spending time with Hashem. Right? And all of a sudden, hang on right there. Hold that thought. I got to go take care of these three Arabs who are outside. Well, hey, if the whole point in life is just getting close to God, well, you're there. You're schmoozing with him. He's in your living room. You're sharing sushi with him, right? So, but no, I'm busy because I got to take care of these guests because that's what it's about. It's not just about me. It's not just about the end goal with me. There was a leader of the Jewish people known as the Chazon Ish. Anyone heard of the Chazon Ish? So he was born in 1878. He was a virtually unknown in Vilna. He was a genius, world-class Torah scholar. Okay, he came to Israel in 1933. Okay, for those of you that know the history of Israel, what was going on in terms of how significant those formative years were in terms of the state of Israel. And he emerged as the leader of the Jewish people for the last 20 years of his life until he passed away in 1953. He was, if there was a problem in the Torah world, there was one address, B'nai Brak, Chazon Ish. And I heard it said that how could it be, how could a person be invested in themselves for so many years and then at that stage in their life emerge as the leader of the Jewish people? How does that happen? And I heard it said that the whole time he was learning, he was thinking, what can I do for the Jewish people? And the single greatest thing I can do for the Jewish people is to give them a Chazon Ish. He built himself to a point where he'd be able to shoulder the burdens of the Jewish people the world over. And then when the time came that the Jewish people needed that, he stepped in to shoulder that load. It wasn't just in for himself. Now, next mission of Pirkei Avos, number three. Hillel v'shamai kibu mehem, Hillel haya oimer. Hillel said, hayim etalmidim shel Aaron. You should be from the students of Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen, Moshe's brother. Now, what does that mean? Oyev shalom, a person loves peace. Veroyev shalom. I won't mention how many litigators we have in the room. while in the topic of loving peace. But anyway, Ohev Shalom, he loves Shalom, and not just that, he loves Shalom like it's a nice idea, like he, you know, has like the, you know, peace or coexist bumper sticker, but Ro'edev Shalom, he's pursuing peace. Ohev Esa Brios, love Brios. Love Brios, good translation? Love creatures, love people. He loves people. He loves people, U'mekarvin l'Torah. He loves people, and he's Mekarvin l'Torah. And why is that? Because if you love people, you want the absolute best for them. Correct? Let's say there's like a snowstorm and you see someone trying to get the snow off their, whatchamacallit, and you have one of those little brushy things, right? I don't know if people use them anymore, but I still use those. So you want to help that other person out. They're holding a package, you open the door for them, right? There are people who love other people. When you love other people, you want the very best for them. Right? And the Torah is maximum satisfaction in life. Hashem gave you life. And you just say, well, you know, you go figure it out. I hope you'll enjoy. He gave you a packet, instructions on the side of the package for maximum satisfaction, shake well, and refrigerate after opening. Right? Now, if you don't want to shake well, and you don't want to refrigerate after opening, gay gives with the hate. That's fine. You have your free will. You don't have to. But if you want maximum satisfaction in life, and who doesn't, then you follow the rules. Right? So if I love people, and I want the best for other people, so I want to give them, bring them close to Torah. Fine. Now, we daven every single day. Roman numeral 4. Talk of a shofar gadol. You should sound the great shofar l'cheruseinu, to our freedom. Let freedom ring. V'sa'anas, and you should raise up a banner l'kabetz l'yoseinu, to gather in those of us who are in Golas and exile. V'kabetzeinu yachad, bring us together in the arba kanfos ha'aretz, from all the universities all over the world where Jews are doing, involved in who knows what, right? Boruch ato Hashem, blessed are you, m'kabetz nidche amo Yisroel. He's gathering together the Nidchei Amo Yisro. Who are the Nidchei Amo Yisro? Who are these people? These are people who, like, don't have the foggiest notion of what it means to be a Jew. They're not aware of the tremendous merit that they have to be born into Jewish people. Through no, they didn't do anything to do it. They didn't do anything to deserve it. But voila, they're born a Jew. They hit the spiritual cosmic jackpot. And they're not aware of it. And we're davening that Hashem should bring these people back. Now, so Kiruv is on the map. Outreach is on the map. Reaching out to other Jews is on the map. Now, what's going to be? Where is this a mitzvah? Is this a mitzvah? Is a nice thing? What's going on over here? Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, bottom of the page. Says the following. There is a mitzvah in the Torah. Where is the source? I'll give someone a sushi roll if there's any left. What is the source in the Torah for Kiruv? That there's a mitzvah to do Kiruv. Mitzvah to be involved in bringing other Jews back. Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, unbelievable. There's a mitzvah of returning a lost object. So you're walking out of shul and you see an umbrella. An umbrella says Rose with a phone number. Say, oh, now I can't just say, you know, whatever, you know, he'll make do with another. I have a mitzvah. Shavuos Aveidah, they return a lost object, correct? So every Jew who's not aware of the fact that he has a person or she has a personal relationship with Hashem is a lost object. You're returning a child back to Hashem. Is that beautiful? Is that beautiful? And he works, I'm not going to go through the verse itself, but he works how a person is off the path, and how first you bring him back to the path, and then you bring him back to Hashem, and how you bring the lost object into your house, that's bringing him to the base medrash, you give him an opportunity to learn Torah. There was a Rav who was introducing a certain speaker, who was going to speak also on the topic of Kiruv, and he said that we're having a guest speaker. He's coming to talk about a personal story about a gentleman who has many children, and so many of them have gone off the derech. They've left the path of observance. And we were all, like, so deflated. He says, Hashem, he's got a lot of kids who are off the derech. He needs a lot of help bringing them back. And the whole class is about Kiruv and bringing Jews back to Torah. There's another source in the Torah. You have to love your neighbor like you love yourself. Correct? And if you see on a person, and he's going down a road that's, we would call a dead-end street, there's not going to be much eternity left for such a person, and their whole spiritual life is being atrophied, and you have an opportunity to nourish it and inspire it and bring it back to life, so that's part of the mitzvah. So far, so good? Great. Okay, now, what's at stake? What's at stake? Let's say, okay, so Kiruv's nice, we'll let Rabbi Zaitchev take care of it, and you know, okay, you know, he'll do a good job. And you heard of a Pew survey, Pew, P-E-W, survey? Yeah, they're involved in a lot. They do a lot of religious surveys and demographics, these type of thing. 71% of non-Orthodox Jews are involved in an intermarriage. Is that shocking? 71%? That's crazy. It's crazy, right? I had a friend of mine, he said to me, Judaism is mostly about the pickles.
About the what?
Pickles. Now, we have a heritage that goes back to Mount Sinai, where Hashem's representatives in the world, there's so much wisdom in every corner of the Jewish calendar, of the Jewish home, of the Jewish, of everything. And Judaism is about the pickles? It's a bright, intelligent person who graduated law school. There are bright, intelligent people who graduate law school. I was at a Kiruv conference. This story I've told you before, but it bears repeating. And various different people in the world of outreach were volunteering what are their most effective programs. And this person said this. And one guy got up and said, I have one word for you. Maidanek. He says, get your students on a plane and bring them to Europe and bring them to the camps and you bring them to Bergen-Belsen, you bring them to Treblinka, and they will ask the single most important question that you want your student to ask, which is, what am I going to do about this? And no other lecture and no other philosophical, whatever it happens to be, get-together and roundtable and demographics. We all have a responsibility, every single Jewish brother and sister who is out there. And when you see such an event, you see such a place, it brings it home. And that's why we're here tonight. I would venture to say that every single person in this room is here tonight because somebody went out of their way to do the mitzvah of Kiruv with you. And maybe it was Rabbi Zaitchik, and maybe it was Revitz and Zaitchik, and maybe it was a colleague, or maybe it was a friend, or a sister, or a mother, or a brother, whatever it happens to be. But most, if not all of us, are here today because someone bothered to go out of their way to try and bring us closer to Hashem. Fine. So what's our role? By the way, when I said controversial, I didn't mean it, but I just say that to get people interested. Okay, now, the... Right, turn the page, Roman numeral 6. This is us, folks. Says the Orach HaTzaddikim. Orach HaTzaddikim, I had the privilege of learning the Orach HaTzaddikim with some of you. Amazing, amazing sefer, 700 years ago, more or less. Says the Orach HaTzaddikim, Ume'atim heim bo'olim hamakirin ha'emes. There are very few people in the world who recognize the emes. The numbers are against us. Says the Chovas Levovos, Roman numeral 7, Hischaivei Anshei Chochma. There's an obligation on Anshei Chochma, people who are wise, not just wise already, but pursuing wisdom. They value wisdom. You know, there are people out there who do not appreciate their nose. A nose is a wonderful thing. It takes the oxygen in, and it warms up the oxygen, and it filters out all the impurities, right? And then imagine, you know, we all know what it's like to have a stuffed nose, and it helps you smell foods that smell delicious, and if the milk is rotten, you smell... A nose... Now, so we should say thank you to Hashem for that. To have teeth, to walk, to talk, to see, to hear, right? I don't see any oxygen tanks here. Great. Valdik, Baruch Hashem, lungs are working, right? Everyone's busy digesting supper, right? The Tovos of Hashem. I was studying tonight, my daughter had on all the planets. And apparently, like on Venus, it's like 900 degrees or something. Mercury, I don't know, one of those planets out there. So, in the meantime, I was saying, like, isn't it amazing Hashem put Earth right in the right place? Right? Imagine how much suntan lotion we need if we get closer, right? He's not even shy. So anyway, the point is that we, if we understand the tovos, the benefits of Hashem, l'hoyrois b'nei odom, we have to teach other people l'das yisron b'derech sichlam. Okay, we have to teach other people to appreciate how good Hashem is to us all the time, whether we deserve it or not. Okay? Because people are oblivious to this, okay? You do not need 25 years in yeshiva for this. You need to think about the fact that I can walk and talk and hear, and all these gifts are coming from Hashem. When I, as it happens from time to time, I get a sense that one of my students are a little deflated or a little depressed, so I say, Borach! not this Baruch. I say, Baruch! I say, where'd you go to high school? He says, Franklin R. Pope, whatever, public school in outside of Atlanta or whatever. I say, how many people were in your graduating class? 206. I said, how many years have been in existence? Since, 1732, whatever. I said, is any single graduate in yeshiva? I said, you're one in a million. If a person would take time to appreciate the fact that we're one of these ma'at, we're one of these few people who recognize the emes, how fortunate we are. I was learning with somebody the Seder, and we're going through the Seder together, and we're going through this part and going through that part, so I wanted to get a basic understanding of where they're coming from. So I said, look, tell me, what's the knowledge level of the people at your Seder? Pretty minimal. Now tell me the interest level of the people at your Seder. Non-existent. And we're going on and this, and we'll take that, and we bring that point. He says, Rabbi, I don't think you really understand. I have 20 minutes to accomplish whatever I can from wire to wire. Now, there are many homes out there that are wondering, am I going to get it all in? Am I going to be able to say all the things I have to say before Chatzos? And midnight is coming, and this I'll say for the second night, and I'll talk about this during the day, and people are peaked and everything, right? So we have to appreciate, we are unique. We're unique. We're special. I was walking over from Simchas Torah with my daughter, and I said, Chani, I said, do you realize what's going on over here? In every single shul in the whole world, in Sydney, in Johannesburg, in London, in Chicago, there are Jews who are dancing to the Torah. I said, you know what went on to Jewish people 60 years ago, 70 years ago? And as you walk home, you hear this shul singing and that shul singing. And then I said to her, I said, and we're also dancing here. Isn't that shocking? You know, are there places we could be on a Saturday night? I don't know if this is accurate. It was my best attempt, but you'll tell me if I'm off. It seemed to me there are 136,000 Jews in Westchester. Can that be?
How many? 136,000?
I thought that was higher.
Yeah?
Yeah.
More?
There was a survey taken going back about 8-9 years, and at that time the number was 150. And many people felt that estimate was too low.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So 136,000, this is a head count over here, but there's less than 136,000 people here, right? I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but I mean, you know.
We're not 136 people.
Where is everybody? So there.
The leadership of Jewish organizations in Westchester generally regard the county as one of the most under-penetrated access Jewish communities.
Right? Got it. Okay, so therefore, folks,
136,000 people make 7 of our churches.
So we're all responsible for 12,000 people. Wow. So first thing you got to do before you go run outside and start, hailing, flagging Jews down, the first thing you got to do is tomorrow morning during davening, when you get to Uvel Etzion and you say, Vehivdi lanu min hatoyim, and Hashem, you save me from those people making a mistake, you should jump out of your chair. You separated me from those people who are not aware of what is going on. You have to thank Hashem for that. But it comes with a responsibility. Says of Noach Weinberg, the extremely dedicated to his mission. I wonder if I have a safer here. Maybe yes, maybe no. Yeah, here we go. One of the pioneers in the world of Kiruv, touched thousands and thousands of lives the year over, said the following: we must ask ourselves, what responsibility can we undertake to help the Jewish people? When you truly care, you will take responsibility. And you would take responsibility, you attain greatness and become a leader. It's about responsibility. So, now that we're all on board, and we all appreciated that we are among the fold, what are the ingredients of effective kiruv? What makes, what's going to enable a person to touch the soul of another Jew? It says the Mithlam Eliyahu. Dessler, we have this on the page? Yes, we do. Number nine. Says the following. I'll read it in English. Says Rav Dessler, writing to his students, one who tries to influence others towards Torah without themselves inwardly experiencing the grandeur of Judaism, lives in a world of illusion. You will not succeed in influencing anyone. Only words that come from the heart, from reality, enter into other people's hearts. So step number one, folks, is that you got to be on fire. You ever try and kindle what you get a fire going, and the firewood was outside, and it rained the night before, and it's got a little... You need kindling to get that, whatever, more, you know, that bigger log to fight, to light up. But if you're damp, and you're ho-hum, and you're not on fire, what is your likelihood of being able to get someone else on fire? Ain't happening. Not happening. If Shabbos is whatever, and davening is when is it over, and mitzvahs are by rote, what is going to be? I once had a student in my class, he said, Rabbi, can I ask you a question? He says, why are Orthodox Jews so unhappy? And I felt like saying, I pity the people who he has been associating with, because they may live very fine lives, and they may be davening nicely, and Shabbos nicely, and everything else like this, but they're going to get up to Shemayim after 120 years, and someone's going to ask them, hello, where was the smile on your face? When you live with an innate sense of Simchas HaChaim, your joy of life, and people know that it's rooted to your Judaism, you have no idea what kind of impact you can make. No idea. There was a certain gentleman, and his whole computer system in his office went down, and all of his accounts for like the last couple of years, and all his outstanding payables. It was a crisis. And for 2-3 days, they couldn't get the system up and running again. And the whole time he was with equanimity, and Hashem does what's for the best. And ultimately, 3 days later, they got the whatchamacallit, the system up and running, and everything was saved, and hooray! But he made such a kiddush Hashem in the interim because they wondered, how in the world can you live with such equanimity? How can you take that in stride? There was a rabbi who said, they were talking about Kiruv and how we're going to reach the people of Pittsburgh. I think it was Pittsburgh. He says, let me tell you one thing. If I would walk to shul on Shabbos morning with a smile on my face that I should have, that I can keep Shabbos and I'm going to daven to Hashem, this whole city would be banging down the shul's doors. It's an innate joyfulness that a person maintains in their life as a Jew. I had a student who was new to the yeshiva, and so I asked him, what are you interested in learning? And he said to me, he said, well, I took new base medrashes. There's halacha, and there's musar, and there's mishnayos. We went around, the chumash, this, that, and he was like kind of a computery kind of guy, and kind of soft-spoken, and then he looked at me and said, well, what are you passionate about? Well, I don't know. Well, I learn because I'm Jewish, and I daven because I'm Jewish. What am I passionate about? Each and every single one of us has something about Yiddishkeit that we're passionate about. If you don't know what it is, look, you'll find it. That is the place to start. That is the place to start. We all are attracted to our own heritage for some type of different reason. Each soul, one person resonates with kindliness, and one person with davening, another person with emuna, another person with studying, another person with the land of Israel, another people with the history of the people, and some people with the holidays, and some people with the cooking, right? But there's something that's out there that you did not need to be, oh, wow, I guess I really, you know, muksa is not it. Let me tell you, muksa is not something you're passionate about, okay? Let me just say, that's not it. I'll cross a couple things off the, like, returning lost objects. There's no one out there. Actually, there's a guy. He's returned, like, a lot of my lost objects. Like, every time I see him, I'm, like, waiting to get something back. But anyway, the point is like this, is that find in your heart that which you're passionate about. And when you start there, it will radiate. It will radiate out. I'm telling you, it will radiate out. Because that's the root of your neshama. That's where you fit with Judaism like a hand in glove. Now, so far so good? Great. Now, going back to Aaron HaKohen, this is a little bit harder. Going back to Aaron HaKohen, he was a person who was bringing people close to Torah because he was the oyeves abrios, because he loved people. I know that's a tall order because people are not so easy to love, but we have to try and find a way to connect human beings. I was told, Jason, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, I was told in when you are trying a case that your success will hinge to a certain degree on the extent to which you can make a personal connection with every single person who's sitting in that jury box. And one person is going to be an inside joke to The Simpsons. Another person is going to be a reference to the fact that the Giants played a lousy game on Sunday. And another person is going to be some trip that they took in Italy. But every single person has something unique to them that if you think about them and where they are, you can strike that chord. I saw a wonderful bumper sticker for a key organization called Partners in Torah, a wonderful organization that hooks people up by phone, and you can study with someone in New Orleans if you want. It's really a neat organization. But they had a slogan which was like this: no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Good? Yeah. No one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. There's a dedication. Gershenfeld did Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael for a yeshiva for people who did not grow up with a Jewish background. So he comes every year to America, and he has a camp, like an introduction to yeshiva type of camp, and they have students from all over the country come. And he was giving a class on love, giving a class on the Jewish approach to love. And one student, he wasn't looking to make a hard time, he said, Rabbi, he says, how do you know how to love somebody? How do you know how to do that? And don't worry, he wasn't married yet. He wasn't married yet. But anyway, the point is, so the rabbi said to me, he says, well, you have to know will that other person feel loved. He said, tell me, I don't know, whatever the guy's name was, you know, Jim, what's your favorite food? He said, pistachio ice cream. And that night, after class were over, the Rosh Hashiva got in his car and drove down to whatever the grocery store was and came back with pistachio ice cream. Now let's talk about what that did for his relationship with this young man. Okay? You probably need 1,000 lectures to be able to make that type of impact, if that. Because all he was listening, he said, I can buy for $3.99 and I can make inroads in this person's heart. When you cultivate that relationship out of truth and out of respect and out of dedication, you know that people are coming, everyone has their own vulnerabilities and insecurities, and you are there for that person. That's how we bring Jews back. Despite the fact that we live in a world of social media and email blasts, there is no thing that I am aware of, you can follow Rabbi Zaitchik, of en mas kiruv. I'm not aware of such a thing. Says Rashi, where are we holding on our sheet? Rashi, X, lower level. Sit lower level. Rashi, okay, down, Roman numeral 10. Says Rashi, he talks about the following, what's going to be? In the future, Hashem is going to come bring the Jewish people back. Yom Kibbutz Golias, he's going to bring back us all out of exile. Bakushi, it's going to be not so easy to do so. Ki'ilu Ato, as of Hashem himself. Mamish. Hashem's going to have to take each person by the hand. Ish Mimkoima. Every single person from their own place. Every single person from their own challenge. Every single person from their own sense of inertia. Every single person from that box that they're in that they can't get out of because, well, if I start to keep Shabbos, the world will fall apart. Or if I stop to keep kosher, my social life will fall apart. Every single person has their Mitzrayim that they have to get out of. And Hashem's going to do it one person at a time. And we're following Hashem. We're following the footsteps of Hashem. So every single person, one at a time. You ne'er can tell how you're going to reach a person. I got a text from a student class that said the following. Sorry I came to class with a bad attitude. I didn't feel I represented the truth. I felt good when you passed me that sitter. Baruch Hashem, I will go get him, as you said. Now, I just said to this young man, oh, you know, maybe you'll hand out the siddurim, or maybe I don't know what I said. But somehow, this minor event resonated with this young man. Now, what if I would sat down and said, well, look, you feel you don't represent the truth. Well, let's talk about truth. What really is truth? And how do we know what... Forget about it. He would have been off the Tappan Zee Bridge by now, right? We have to daven, as I mentioned, we have to daven every single day in our Shemona Esrei. We have to daven for the Jews to come back. Not just in Westchester, but in every college campus the world over, and every ashram the world over, and every IDF soldier the world over, men, women, children, right? Whatever school they are, however age they are, it should be part of our tefillos. Anyone know what the flood is referred to? The flood is referred to as Mei Noach, the waters of Noach. Now, That doesn't seem very nice. He was only busy for 125 years. How long have you been busy at this? 125 years? Close.
120.
Okay. 120 years, Noach was busy trying with his Jep of Bovel or wherever he lived, right? And he was Rabbi Zaitchik's record is much better than Noach, right? Noach didn't have a house full of people, right? And so he tried for 120 years, busy trying to bring people back to Judaism and back to realizing there's one God, and you get a single student, and the whole waters are called the waters of Noach. That doesn't seem very nice. It says in the commentaries, you should have davened. Noach, you should have opened up your heart. It's busy. Nice that you're busy building an ark that's going to save everybody, right? Let's open up your mouth and you open up your heart and daven for Jews to come back. So even if you don't have your own organization, and you don't know any Jews, you can't tell me you don't know any Jews, because you all live in Westchester, so you all know Jews, okay? So that's not an excuse, okay? But let's say you know nobody. I know a guy, he says he has zero, he's the worst track record of any person in Kiruv ever. He's never influenced anybody to do anything. But okay, but three times a day, you say, look, Hashem, there are other people out there who are trying to reach Jews, let them be successful. Now, I can't do it justice over here. But on the second page, you have from the Cholos Levavos. The Cholos Levavos says the following. He's holding at the very end of the Sefer, the gate of Avas Hashem, the love of Hashem. And now you can't just skip there. You can't just skip there. You have to go through all the other gates if you're really serious about it. Now, he's giving signs. How do you know a person loves Hashem? How do you know a person who loves Hashem? They have a sign. I voted last week. I got a little sticker. I voted. My kids come home from the dentist. I was at the dentist. There's a sign. There's a sign that says that you love Hashem. He says the following. A sign, I'm going to read it in English. We all have to do this. You have to treat yourself and read this in English again and again. But anyway, you have it here in Hebrew. We'll go through some of it inside. He says, a sign that a person loves Hashem, he guides and directs others to serve Hashem. Part of loving Hashem is that I want other people to be a part of that love. I want that relationship to be vibrant by other people. He goes on to say, you should know, this is part I have underlined over here, you should know, my brother, that if you were to attain the utmost limit in improving your soul, so imagine that for hours every day you're communing with God, and you have another hour of the day you work on humility, and another hour a day you work on, I don't know, alacrity, and you have, you dissolved all your negativity, you're there. You're in the zone. Okay? He says you should know that even if you're at the level of a prophet, okay, in your conduct and the way you serve Hashem, that you are not on par with a person who is guiding others to the right path and directing those to serve Hashem. And he goes on to give a equation, we would say, that for all the mitzvahs that you're doing, that's great, that's wonderful, that's a nachas upstairs, and we're sitting you in your bank for eternity. But if you inspire another Jew, and that other Jew is going to make kiddush on Friday night, so now you have a portion in every single kiddush they'll make for the rest of their life. And then someone davens, and every single prayer that they utter, you have a portion of that, you have a stake in that. And then they teach their kids to do mitzvahs, and then you encourage a person to give tzedakah, or open their house to guests, or whatever it happens to be, you're able to connect up with another Jew. That is your ticket that will be waiting for you forever. It's a sign that you love Hashem. Now, are we together? So far so good? Okay. Where are we holding? Okay, getting close. Now, we have to be alert to opportunities to reach out to another Jew. Okay? Everybody has got some situation that they're dealing with. Okay? Most of the time it's the mother-in-law, but let's, you know, beside that. But everybody's got someone in their family that is presents a challenge, presents an issue, puts certain static, friction, whatever it happens to be, maybe a barrier to their own growth in Judaism, correct? We have to be mindful of these type of things. There was I once was involved in marketing for a law firm, and I wasn't really up my alley. I wasn't very very good at it. But the attorney said, "Look," he said, "I got this book on marketing. Maybe you take a look at it." I was very 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 inspired. He says the following. I told you a story about the fisherman. Did I tell you a story about the fisherman last time? Remember the fisherman? No one remembers. Everyone's asleep. Okay. Anyway, the fisherman said that there was a little boy, and his father's a fisherman, and he's all excited. He's got the age, and he can now go out in the boat with daddy. And the father goes out. He says, "Okay, son." And they're carrying out the tackle and the bait, and he's the fisherman. He's all excited. And he says, "Okay, dad, what are you doing?" He says, "You sit right here." He says, "I'm not going in the boat." He says, "No, you're not going in the boat." "We're not going to the boat." He says, "Your job is to watch the harbor and see what the harbormen do and see how the fishermen do." And he comes back, and then the next day, the same thing. The kids are saying, "No, no, let's go to the boat." And Erev Shabbos, he comes back Friday. He says, "Okay, son, next week you're on the boat. Next week I'm on the boat." Okay. He says, "But tell me." He says, "What did you learn this week?" "I don't know. Well, you spent the whole week watching the fishermen in the harbor. So tell me, what'd you come away with? I put you here by the harbor for a reason." He says, "Well, Dad, you know, to be honest, I'm not terribly impressed with these harbor people. They really had a very lousy track record." He said, "I just taught you the single greatest lesson in fishing." He says, "Don't follow the fishermen. Follow the fish. When you're looking for a yid, you ne'er can tell. You ne'er can tell where you're going to find him." Amazing Maisa is brought by Rav Zilberstein. Brings an incredible, incredible story. Says the following: there was a yid. Why did the innocent rabbi go to jail? That's the title of this essay. He has over here the following: there was a yid who lived, I forget exactly where he lived, in Ashkelon. Ashkelon, he gets a knock on the door. The police rush the rabbi into the police car, and they bring him down to the station. They throw him in the clink. No, you know, right to an attorney. You can't speak to Kessler. You can't speak to Kogan. You can't speak to any attorneys that are out there, right? Goldman also. Okay, so anyway, he doesn't want to talk to me. But in the meantime, so he has a cellmate, and he asks this guy. He says, "Look," the guy says, "You know, rabbi, what are you here for?" He says, "You know, to be honest, I don't really know." So he says, "What are you here for?" He says, "Well, I roughed up my fiance." Okay. Sounds like they could use a Shalom Bias lecture, I guess. He roughed up his fiance. She called the cops on him, fine. So he says, "But you know what? I'm going to marry her anyway. You know, I feel really bad. She used to be married to my brother, and then he passed away, and, you know, we developed a relationship." And wait a second, the bells go off in this rabbi. He says, "Wait a second. You're going to marry your former sister-in-law. The Torah doesn't say such good things about that shidduch." And through the rest of the next couple of hours, the rabbi begins talking to him about what the Torah has in mind in terms of marriage, and how there's a big prohibition against marrying your former sister-in-law. And through the next few hours, he begins to persuade this Jew that he shouldn't get married to the sister-in-law. The sheriff, or whoever it is, the deputy of the prison, comes in, and he is ready to apologize. He says, "The rabbi had the wrong guy, and he's been sitting in prison for 4 hours for a crime he didn't commit, and he's expecting he's going to be, you know, sued for, I don't know, who knows what, unlawful imprisonment, or who knows what." And he says, "Rabbi, you're free to go. I'm terribly sorry." He says, "No, don't have to apologize at all. I know exactly why you brought me here tonight, because I had to meet this guy. I had to save his eternity." Another story, unbelievable story, called In Memory of the Pet Dog. In Memory of the Pet Dog, 2008, Operation Cast Lead. There was a couple, also in Ashkelon, interesting, okay. They were in they were driving on the highway, and they heard a siren, right? So they had to pull off over here, and there was a dog that ended up dying. When he swerved off, he ended up hitting this dog. Fine. So what happened over here was the following, was that the person driving the car was an Orthodox Jew, and the person who lost the dog was a completely secular Israeli. But they started a relationship based on their commiserating over the loss of the dog. And ultimately, they started a friendship, and they started learning together, they started to share Shabbos together, who knows what, and the couple that lost the dog ends up becoming frum, they end up becoming observant, and then they wanted to dedicate, this here's the Shiloh, just to make it interesting, this is in parentheses, they wanted to dedicate a study hall, a base medrash. So they named it, he came and he sees the plaque, Zichron Igor. He said, "Who's Igor?" That's the name of the dog. Anyway, that was the Shiloh, whether it was appropriate to name the shul after a dog. Okay, anyway, so if you have such a question, ask Rabbi Zaitchik. Anyway, but this will happen. You guys, if you pay attention, it will happen all the time. What do they call it? Bageling? Right? You're in the elevator, and all of a sudden, I was in the elevator with a guy, and like, he had like an afro. He was a white guy, but he had like an afro. And like as for, and he says to me, this week is my bar mitzvah portion. I was like, all right, Kareem, right? You're sitting in, you know, in someone's, let's just say, I have a daughter who's in Israel. Right? Like, as if I'm walking around with a plaque saying, if you have anything to do with Judaism, please tell me about it, right? Everyone's volunteering all this information, right? But who knows? What did Mordecai tell Esther? Who knows if you're in this palace for this particular reason? Mm-hmm. You ne'er can tell. And if that opportunity comes your way, you got to do the best you can. Hashem wants you there. My mom had a story. She was looking at a sweater or something, and just talking, started this conversation. The woman was there. So you know, if I spend more time with you, I'd really be more observant over a sweater, right? Didn't say, oh well, let me take out my shtender and I'll tell you a lecture. Let's learn Rashi. No. Now, I know what you're all saying. We're going to wrap up in about 5-10 minutes over here. That's what you're all saying. When is this over? No. I know what you're all saying is, but that's not really for me. Because I'm not particularly good at this, and who am I? I don't really know that much. So don't listen to that voice. There are famous parable from the Chofetz Chaim, and there was in my house, I'm like the only one who drinks the tap water. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like the best tap water in the world. But anyway, so we had the Poland Spring, right? But in the meantime, the filter, right? They look like you drink the water like I don't know, like I live in, you know, who knows what, like a nuclear Chernobyl or something. Anyway, the meantime is, so a guy, there was a fire broke out in the village, and they said, water, and the guy finally shows up, and he says, where was everybody? He says, well, we had to go to the purifier. The purifier, what did the purifier for? You don't drink that kind of water. He says, there's a fire going on. We don't need purifier. We don't need Perrier to put out the flame. We need water. We need water on the flame. So don't say, who am I and what am I going to contribute? There's a scourge going on in the Jewish people, and every single one of us have an opportunity and responsibility to do something about it. There's a parsha, actually, two parshas in the Torah that describe the vessels that appear in the Beis HaMikdash. And there's a table, and there's an aron, there's an ark, right? And there's a menorah, and there's a mizbeach, right? And the Torah is very busy. It's like if you're an architect, like they gave you a couple, and they tell you how many amos it was, and how big it was, and how tall it was, right? All of them are laid out, you know, exactly the dimensions, except for what? Except for the menorah. The Torah does not tell you the dimensions of the menorah. Why? Because the purpose of the menorah is to give light. And even if you're an itty-bitty menorah, you can give off a lot of light. Especially when it's dark. We were up in the mountains, this is what you recall, this past summer, and this was unbelievable. I drove to Minyan. It was like, I don't know, a 20-minute ride to Minyan. I didn't see like a light. It was so in the country, but the stars were unbelievable. Because it was so dark, the light of the stars you can see. My friends, we are witnessing a revolution in the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. There are people who are coming back one at a time to a heritage that sat dormant for generations. We wonder how this is taking place. There is only one reason, is that you have wind in your sails. Hashem is rooting for every single Jew, no matter where they are. We say, and Hallel will say to me, it's Hashem on Sunday morning with Rosh Chodesh, Nikimi me'afar dal. He brought me up from the dust. Now, the Jewish people have been saying that for a long time. Michal Sam Sofer said that in Pressburg, and the Vilna Gaon said that. But I don't know if the afar of the world, the dust of the world, ever looked the way it does right now. There's so many challenges for a person to say, I'm interested in spirituality. But that's what we have to do. We have to daven for the Nidchei Yisroel, those people who are outside the fold and don't even know there's a fold to be a part of. We're going to wrap up with an amazing story. Again, we came just to review. There's a responsibility on every single Jew not to be focused solely on themselves. If I'm just for me, what am I? And we spoke about the concept of a mitzvah of bringing Jews back, Hashem's lost children. The responsibility of yourself being on fire. If you want to do something with the Jewish people, get yourself motivated, get yourself fired up. Every single person has a root that they're deeply connected to Judaism. They don't have to think 22 hours about what it is. They don't need to focus. You're in sync with Hashem. Start from there. Get yourself excited about Yiddishkeit. Learn more. love other people, look for an opportunity to connect to other people, realize that you have a role to play. Now, this story is unbelievable.
I wouldn't have believed it.
Let's see, I still don't believe it. Okay, I'm not sure where I was. I'll tell the story outside.
I thought I brought it with me. Okay. Nothing but a walk. Now, the story goes like this. There was a Jew, a very, very dedicated Jew, who gave classes in Tel Aviv. And one day he showed up to his class, and the weather was rainy, cold, and no one showed up at his class. This man passed away, and the rabbi's name was Pollock. When he passed away, a very large gentleman showed up with a shiva. No one knew who he was. He said, "I owe my life to your father." And he proceeded to tell the following story. This rabbi Pollock was supposed to give a class on this day, on this cold, rainy day in Tel Aviv, and nobody showed up at the class. But he didn't despair. So he went out in the street looking for people who might be interested. Went to this, and this guy, one guy walked past him, and he said, "Are you interested in going to a class?" He looked like, came from Mars. What are you getting from? No, right? And then, okay, so no one was interested in coming to their class. But he didn't give up. He went up to a local dira, a local apartment building, and started knocking on doors. Knocked on this one door, heard no answer, went back down to the street, tried to find a couple other passersby, went back up to the apartment building, again started knocking on doors. When he came back to the first apartment that he had knocked on, a man comes out, enormous, draggled hair, bloodshot eyes. He says to him, he opens the door, he says, "Who sent you here?" And this guy thought he was going to be torn to shreds. And he didn't know what to say, this rabbi. So the man, anyone heard the story? He says, "Who sent you here? Do we know each other?" He grabs his rabbi, pulls him into the apartment, and the rabbi sees out of the corner of his eye a noose is hanging from the ceiling. And he proceeds to tell the story that he's lived alone for 40 years since his parents passed. And no one's come to visit him. And he'd given up on life. And he went up to take his life. He was ready to take his life. And he said, "Hashem, if you care about me, send me a sign." And he went up to end his life, and he thought he heard a knock on the door. So he went down, he opened up the door, he didn't see anybody. Okay, false alarm. 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, he goes back up, he's ready to end his life. And who shows up at the door? Rabbi Pollock. That was Hashem sent him. Hashem heard that tefillah of that forlorn Jew. Now, if Rabbi Pollock did not have a burning, yearning desire to reach out and touch every single Jew, then he would have packed up shop, he would have made himself a nice coffee and sat down at Beis Medrash and said, I'm a chaya. I can learn by myself, my own thing. I don't have to teach anybody. I can be enjoying my own company. No. There are Jews out there that need me. And so when this gentleman showed up and he became an observant Jew, and he showed up at Rabbi Pollock's, the shiva of Rabbi Pollock, the kids never heard of the story. He said, "I owe my entire life to your father." Never give up. Every single person has a mission to achieve. If you get busy inspiring yourself, you'll inspire others. If you tap into your own fire inside, you ne'er can tell the fires that you can light in other people. It was Alder from the Vardic.
Unbelievable. He went out to the
where is this over here? He went out to the forest. Okay, we'll tell you the mice. I thought I had it here. Okay. Anyway, he went out to the forest to do a kindliness, do a chesed for someone. And he had a student with him, and the student was amazed at his whole emunah and betachon going out in this this voyage that he was on, this venture that he was on. And he said to himself, he said to his student, he says, I have a responsibility in this world to light up the night like the sun at noontime. Every single one of us have it. There's a lot of darkness out there, but there's a lot of light within, in the Torah, in every single Jewish neshama. So I want to give a bracha to Kessler's, to all of Jep, to all the Jews, wherever they may be. It's a blessing the Chofetz Chaim used to give people. I've said it to you before, so you may recognize it, that we should all be like the sun. We should all be like the sun. He should bring light. He should bring warmth. And just help others grow. So with that, and Yetz Hashem, we'll all ignite ourselves, get fired up on the opportunity, the tremendous wealth that it is to be counted among the Jewish people. And if we get ourselves excited about our relationship with Hashem, you ne'er can tell we can inspire in others. Be together, L'shana haba v'yushalayim, v'bias goyel tzedek, mehir mehna omei. Questions, comments, rebuttal?
I have a question. You know, there's a proliferation, especially Orsamath grads, there's two famous ones on YouTube. And every now and then I see another rabbi, and they all have like different hashgafa. They all you have like different slants on this. Rambamists, you know, there's people who are really into Kabbalah. There's people who are ultra rationalists. Do you see this phenomenon as a sign of the way the winds are blowing?
I think you will have come around from the side door over here. I had a rabbi of mine who was in town from Israel in August. I hadn't seen him in a while. And I said, Rabbi, I said, at the end of the day, what am I here to do for the Jewish people? He says, at the end of the day, you got to do what you do best. You have to do what you do best. And there's certain people who are speakers, and there's certain people who are writers, and certain people. Now, I could have got up here, probably couldn't have, but I might have been able to pull it off and talk about morals and deep thoughts, and we're all Gilgulim, and we come from another world. But that's not me. That's not where I'm at. That's not where the rubber meets the road for me. And every single person, your own, I had an opportunity to, there was a group that came to the Beis Medrash. I took them up to the Ezra's Noshim, looks down onto the whole. I said, that person over there is learning about the Shofar. And this person's learning about challah. And this person's studying about the holiday of Yom Kippur. And this person's talking about what happens if an ox runs into another ox. And this person's talking about what bracha to make out of a papaya. Right? Now, there's a concept called a person should learn mashalibo chafetz. A person should learn mashalibo chafetz, what her heart desires. Ravig de Miller was asked, what musser, what book should a teacher learn with his students? He said, that which inspired you the most is what you should give over to your students. Because if you're fired up about it, it'll come through. If you're excited about it, if you live it, if you breathe it, if it's yours, it'll come through. So I think from that standpoint, if people, you know, have developed a niche, which is theirs, which is authentic Torah Judaism, and not, you know, my opportunity to, you know, showcase my own talents, then you have to meet people where they're at. Yeah?
I was going to say, like you mentioned about this, that we all have responsibility. And I know we kind of discussed it times at Rabbi Zaitchuk's class and kind of take this idea that if you perhaps, just to add a little bit, synthesize this point, like if you're trying to influence somebody and that somebody sort of distant, not that close, perhaps a person that is not quite the rabbi may even have a better success than the rabbi is, because that person is kind of feels so far away that, so rabbi is like, it's just too far for me.
Right.
So whereas somebody who is not Rabbi may have a better shot at, with enthusiasm, with some kind of words of Torah, sort of reach out to that person.
It's a very, very important point. I was at a certain crossroads in my life, and I spoke with a leader of an organization in Eretz Yisrael. He was involved in launching a lot of people in outreach, and I sent them to this person to Columbus, Ohio, and this person to L.A. And so I was talking to him and about where I was, where I can make an impact. He says, let me tell you, He says you can reach more people as an attorney as well as a rabbi. I think that's a point. I mean, people need living Jews. This is my colleague. He's someone in my office. He's someone in my suite. He's someone that I see in court. He's a person I see at the coffee place. This is a person that I live with. I can relate to them. I see they're leaving Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Why are they doing that? I see this person. I was at work with someone, and they were talking on Friday afternoon about Thursday, who was coming to the night meal, who was coming to the day meal, who was sleeping over. There was a secular girl who was working. She says, what, do you run a hotel? Mm-hmm. Right? And how many guests are coming? And then he could come back. How was your weekend? Oh, amazing. Really? My weekend, I'm exhausted already because I'm hungover from Friday. And this person had a whole time with their... Wow, you actually have time with your children, and you actually put down the cell phone, and you actually can have meaningful, engaging. That's what a novel idea. That sounds like something I'd be, right? So you have a unique opportunity because you live in their world. They relate to you. A rabbi already, he's like, you know, off the deep end, and he's, you know, living who knows where, but he shares life with you. This person understands me. He gets me, and I see, wait a second, his life is seemingly deeper and more meaningful and more fulfilling than mine. And they'll try and hinge that on something, you know, other than Judaism. But at the end of the day, it'll come through. Okay.
I'd like to, on behalf of everyone, I would like to say that we did more than hear a 5-star lecture tonight. Rabbi Vitters succeeded in bringing everyone in this room into the very center of the single mitzvah that is most important to facilitate the final redemption of our people. If we internalize what we heard tonight and figure out what we can do about it, then the results are far beyond what we could possibly imagine. I would like to say that, number one, we have our next lecture in the planning stage for December. I recommend, if you want to be on board with what's going on at JEP, if you check our website, jepofwestchester.com, you can click on to get emails about our upcoming events. Number two, on Monday evenings at our headquarters in Mamaroneck, we have a weekly class called Spiritual Scuba Diving. You don't have to bring a towel, but you do have to bring willingness. It's everybody gets into it. It's, everybody gets involved, and it's a back and forth, and we study the weekly Torah portion. We pick a couple of points, and we go scuba diving really in depth. So that's 8:30 in Mamaroneck. We'd love to see you, and I want to thank you once again. This was Out of This World. And I want to thank Vera and Jason for hosting. You guys are great. This is wonderful. Let us first remember so much. Vera and Jason would like to invite everybody for the refreshments that they prepared. And one more very important point.